Good evening and aloha. Meow, meow,
meow, meow. Forget it. It's not like a cat crying.
I was going to say, Bill, turn off your Don Ho album, please.
Tiny bubbles.
In any case, I am Johnny Numb, your tour guide for this evening, alongside my driver.
I feel like Gilligan. Billy Crash.
I could see you in that hat, yeah. Bill, you know?
And I'm going to do something Johnny didn't do. This is the Last Knock horror podcast.
Yes, and the Last Knock is actually going to be expanding its brand into the island tour business.
Yeah, that's us. That's us.
Bill, you know what? I would love to see you rage drive a golf cart around an island.
Oh, dude, I'll do it too.
Get out of the way!
I was just going to say, get out of my way, you bastard! This car's electric!
I got to get it to a plug.
Exactly. Charge is running long, time's running out!
It's the iCart, Bill.
Oh, my God. It wouldn't make any noise because it's fucking electric.
And it's powered by an iWatch, yeah.
Powered by a gerbil.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, keeping with our sort of odd theme, last week we were talking about swimming pool horror, and what do you associate swimming pools with? Kind of the summer months, the warmer months, the months that justify getting in cool water and just to take the edge off. We're talking about Islands of Horror tonight as a setting in horror films and what possibly an island might mean just in general terms. We got a couple movies to talk about, but Billy, before we get into that, what were you able to dredge up about islands and their symbolism?
Ooh, wow. Johnny, there's so much not to talk about.
I would like to know more, Bill.
The only good bug's dead bug.
Starship Troopers took place on an island, didn't it?
Yeah. What was it? Zagobah Beach?
Oh,
it's not there anymore. But anyway, I always wanted to go there. It's not there anymore, man. Anyway, we digress rapidly, as we always do. Island pretty much represents what most people think, isolation. You're on your own, and hopefully it's a good island, you know, and you're feeling great. You have coconuts, you have beautiful people around you, and, you know, fresh food and warm sand and, you know, all that crap. But, you know, normally, as we see, and I don't know, one horror movie that doesn't deviate from this plan. You're on an island, on, you know, you're screwed. You're alone. You know, either the ship or the helicopter is going to come within 3 days or 7 days. You either have no cell phone service or, you know, you washed up on the wrong beach on a wrong island and you're screwed. Or you're on an island getaway and suddenly something, you know, goes awry and you're just screwed because you're stuck. So what do you do? And that's pretty much what it comes down to. You're isolated, represents isolation. And that's it.
Oh, okay.
So good night. Be careful.
It was a great show, Bill.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. Watch out in your boat, and if you have to build a raft, I don't know. Good luck with that, because one wave hits it, you're pretty much fucked.
Be sure to tip the boatman, especially if that boatman is Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Well, you know, if I'm leaving an island, I want Bear Grylls, because. Not because he could build a raft, but because he's got a crew with him and a helicopter.
Wait a second, Bill. Who are you talking? Who did you say?
Bear Grylls, man. Oh, he's cool as shit, man. The guy from the UK who goes to, like, exotic places, teaches you how to survive.
You watch more TV than I do.
No. I used to watch his, I forgot what his survival show was called, and then he left it. Now he has another one. And what he does is he takes superstars out, you know, celebrities, to go on an adventure with them. And, it's not Hetty. It's not Lena Hetty. It's Lena Hattie. I found out the pronunciation of her name. And she was on one of the shows. And, she's just awesome. So,
Oh, man, I would love to see Lena Headey as Mama go out to an island somewhere.
Yeah, she was not acting like Mama when she went out. It was more like, ah! You know, and Don Cheadle's in another one. I missed that one, but I can see Don Cheadle going, I'm not doing that shit. You know, like, I can see, I'm not eating no damn spider. What the frick? Get me out of here. Where's my agent, man?
Hey, Bill, you know something that's interesting now that you brought this up? Something I didn't think about was, what do you... I mean, did you watch Survivor at all when that was, like, a big thing, like, oh, man, 15 years ago?
You know, I kid you not, Johnny. My housemate, lovely and vivacious Cheryl Betts, she is a Survivor fanatic. She's watched every season. So some nights, you know, when, you know, she would come home, I'd have dinner ready, we would eat together, and lo and behold, Survivor's on, you know. So I've watched it. It's a and I actually sort of enjoy it to a degree. Like, I hate the melodrama and crap, you know, and everybody's got, you know, oh, here's my story when my son, like, left me to go to kindergarten and I cried. Okay, cue to music. But it's a great social experiment, because, like, all these people want to, like, well, I'm really a nice person, but I want to win the game, so I have to be an asshole. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, it's like, I don't know. But, yeah, but it's sort of fun. You know, you're screwed on an island for like 30 days. You're losing weight because you're not eating like you normally do. And you have to compete with these other people for $1 million. And you have to sell your soul in the process. So it's like, you know, it's interesting to a degree. And then, and you wonder, man, if everybody played this honestly, like, how would the game work? Like, who would win? How would it work? But so it's pretty intriguing to watch sometimes. But
yeah, and I think something, Bill, was a complaint that people brought up about that show was that, well, you have a camera crew
right
on you all the time, and, you know, there's obviously you're surviving, but they're not going to leave you to die on the island. So
no, but it's more or less surviving the in a social context.
Okay,
you know,
all
like
right.
I don't know, like 20 people, whatever, go out there, and in the end, only one can win, you know, the $1 million prize. So, you know, what can you do and say and everything else to make sure that you're in that top tier to, like, make it to a vote, you know, to win. And it's interesting. There's people on there. It's like, man, that guy's an asshole. He needs to go. Or, you know, or, man, that person's really cool. I hope they got voted off because they were really cool and they didn't do what they needed. You know, they didn't, you know, try to be a jerk, you know. So it's interesting in that regard. But, yeah, they're not really – they're surviving in a social context only.
Well, and you mentioned before the show, Bill, you were talking about Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. Oh, man, great. If you haven't read the book or seen the original film, you must do that. It's an excellent – again, not the whole thing's social. You know, it's about little boys in a boat, and, you know, you can consider a horror. They're on an island. They're stranded there, and some boys go bonkers, man, and they wage war with others, and there's killing and all this horrific crap, and obviously it represents the planet. You know, who gets to speak, who has power, who doesn't, you know, how to be a real man, you know, so to speak. It's multi-thematic. I mean, we could do 10 shows on it. We could have the friggin' Lord of the Flies podcast if we wanted. It's so loaded.
I'm sure it already exists.
I have no doubt. Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah, and it's really kind of challenging stuff. I mean you see all the stuff that's ripped it off in the years since, because it is such like a universal kind of story that you can infinitely sort of mold into sort of Shakespearean in the sense of how you could mold it to fit a certain era as well.
No, agreed. And an interesting piece of trivia from the original film. It's an adventure drama, not a horror again, but, you know, it was directed by Peter Brook and it was written by the great William Golding. The interesting thing was a young Hugh Edwards in 1963 played the part of Piggy. And spoiler alert, I mean, it's so old, but Piggy gets killed in the story. And the interesting thing that really happened, and it took a while for the crew to realize what was going on, and I believe Peter Brook had to step in the day that Piggy's character was going to die on while filming. He was saying, young Hugh Edwards, I'd say about 10, 12 or something like that at the time, he was saying goodbye to everybody. Wow. He really thought they were going to kill him. And it was like, no, you know, it's like, holy shit, man. You know, it's like, dude, where's your, what's going on? You know, and I think that's the important thing about the book too, and the movie. It's about these kids are stranded, no parental guidance at all. And so they're trying to like pretty much recreate society on their own to survive, and with disastrous consequences.
It kind of reminds me, Bill, of a little bit of what would come later with the Stanford Prison Experiment, kind of.
Yeah, prelude to a Scream for real.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that wasn't an island, but it was that same sense of isolation. You were mentioning the lack of parental supervision, mm-hmm. Even though there was a professor monitoring, quote unquote, the whole thing.
And you know what happened? You know why the professor called the experiment?
Well, because he was implicating himself in the actions of the boys.
No, it wasn't because of that. His girlfriend.
Oh yeah,
was looking at it. She was like, "What are you fucking doing, man? You gotta stop this thing." She's the one who encouraged him to stop it because he wasn't going to. He was so into it.
You know what, Bill? Yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, she had to come and say something because he was becoming so entrenched in the psychosis that was overtaking the whole experiment.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Absolute power corrupts. You know.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's a harrowing story about what happened, but I think it's one of the most fascinating things I've ever, you know, that it actually happened.
It is, and I'm glad you brought that up by way of Lord of the Flies, because like most of the horror movies I'm looking at, you know, there's that take place on an island. There is that element where like mm-hmm. either somebody owns the island and you must bend to their will, or they're manipulating things on the island. Or, you know, or taking people out one by one on the island, and you're a captive audience, you've got nowhere to go. Go ahead, run, have fun. You know, gosh, if you think of it, even Wolf Creek, man, that's Australia's the largest island, continent, country, you know.
So if you want to make it that broad, Bill, yeah.
If you want to go back, well, the whole planet's an island, man. It's all
this
hard.
This island Earth, yeah.
Yes, this island Earth. Sorry. Anyway. Oh, man.
Wow. Well, I interrupted you, Bill. Where were you going with that?
I have no idea. No, but the thing is, like, you know, you think of, you know, one of the things that I think of right away when I think of Horror Island, I always think of the original and the remake and the story in general of the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and you have this Dr. Moreau character who's a doctor, so they say, and he owns this island, man, and he's going to bend people to his will, and he's going to manipulate experiments on people that, you know, turn them into like half animal and all. And apparently there's been like three different movies. It's based on an H.G. Wells story.
Yeah, there was a 1932's Island of Lost Souls.
Right. 77's The Island of Dr. Moreau, directed by Don Taylor.
And then there was the infamous Richard Stanley / John Frankenheimer 1996 version.
Yes, absolutely. Which I haven't seen yet.
It's interesting. It's got Fairuza Balk in it.
Okay, I'm there. Anyway,
yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Actually, Richard Stanley in it because I love Dust Devil. But
well, the thing is, Bill, that's the movie that he got fired from it.
That's right.
And you know what? There, if you want to make it four movies, there's actually a great documentary called Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, man. But you know what? I'm glad you brought up, and it's my favorite. I thought it was actually quite frightening, was the 1932 version, Island of Lost Souls, starring Charles Laughton and Bela Lugosi in there as well. Charles Laughton, he outdoes himself in incredible fashion in that movie. It has a major creep factor. Obviously, it's black and white. The contrast, the nighttime shots are just really fantastic. But Charles Laughton, he is like insane in that movie. He's and creepy insane. Like, it's hard to look at his into his eyes, you know. I'm sure you've seen Charles Laughton many times, you know, listeners and stuff. But you got to see him in this movie because it's a creep. It's a creep show, man.
Yeah, and there's the Criterion Collection put out a nice version of this movie because it had been sort of languishing for years, like it was unavailable on disc. It had only been available on VHS, and finally, because I'd been waiting to get my hands on a copy, like a nice copy, since I was a kid and I first saw this movie. But it's fantastic. I mean, it's still a powerful movie to watch. Thematically and even in terms of the visuals and the performances, Laughton really walks this razor edge between between totally camp being campy, but he totally maintains this really sick sadism, and he even plays characters like sexual attitudes against each other to get like an outcome that he wants.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, he's the god. He's God. You know, he's like, I've created you. I created you, mutant people. You know, bent to my will. You know, this is Blade Runner without the robot portion. It's the animal portion. You know, it's it's really got Alan Ladd's even in it, man.
Oh, who does he play?
He plays one of the beasts. He's uncredited, and it's unconfirmed, but. I don't know why. I mean, all you have to do is ask the Ladd family. Well, was your dad in it? You know? But anyway. but, you know, to pull yourself away from humanity to create your own world by toying with human evolution is... can't get any more sociopathic and arrogant and self-absorbed and narcissistic than that. Egomaniacal, megalomaniacal.
Well, Bill, and you go back to what we were saying about Lord of the Flies. There's that sense of tyranny, kind of, and sense of God complex going on because Dr. Moreau's island's not being checked for human rights violations or anything like that because he runs the place.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know, and it's by accident that our main character finds himself on the island because he's on a ship and the ship wrecks and that's where he finds himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and interestingly enough, I don't know if you knew this, it's claimed that the British censors who were against it said the Island of Lost Souls, they said it was against nature. And Elsa Lanchester, who played the bride in Bride of Frankenstein, said, "Of course it's against nature. So's Mickey Mouse." I hope that's true. I just really do, man.
Mickey Mouse is a cartoon abomination.
And once again, apparently Bela Lugosi only got $800 freaking dollars for his part, which was less than anybody on there. He was so screwed. Everything he did, man.
Yeah, he didn't seem to be able to catch a break.
No, never. Once he lowballed because, you know, for Dracula, because he wanted it so bad, they, you know, everything I've ever read said he was never able to negotiate a decent contract. And at the time, he was near bankruptcy, so he was like, $800, I'll take it. I can't believe it. That's just sick.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, man.
No, it's okay. I mean... Something else I like about that film is how they really turn the island into, I hate to use the expression, a character unto itself, but, you know, early on when Dr. Moreau is taking the shipwreck, I forget the guy's name, he's just walking him around his plantation and the island, and he has these absurdly huge plants and vegetables growing, like the size of Macy's balloons, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like he's just sort of like matter-of-factly talking about this stuff. I sort of like how the filmmakers bring in this element of, nature is a big theme, and nature versus nurture, nature versus science in that film.
I think it's safe to say this could be in many ways our first, you know, ecological horror film.
Yeah.
You know, with those elements and, you know, and one of the, you know, great lines from Charles Laughton. Do you know what it means to feel like God? And it's like, I don't know, because you're playing it and you're not playing it well. You know, you're scaring everyone. You're killing people. You're freaking them out. You're cutting them up, you bastard. Like, you know, you have, you know, he's the be all end all. And talk about a totalitarian society.
Well, Bill, and what did you think about the fact that he is constantly wearing white throughout the film?
Yeah, which I thought was really cool. First, it looked great on film, you know, especially with all the darkness around him, the darkness he created. And I think he's trying to, you know, present himself as like a white knight or white representing a godlike figure, you know, the white robe and all of that. And, yeah. And also an extension of a lab coat, because he's a scientist and he's a scientist all the time. And because I'm a scientist, I know better than you. And so it was all that whole, it fit that perfectly, that holier than now mentality. I think that was perfect for the whole thing. And you got, man, people, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's pretty potent.
Yeah, I mean, it's from 1932, and it's it's still effective today. I watched it a couple years ago, and I think I found it more disturbing as an adult than I did when I was little watching it.
Hard to argue, buddy. Hard to argue.
I think it's because of all those themes that we were talking about. It's like, oh, well, that stuff just went over my head, and I saw it as a monster movie as a kid. And now it's like, oh, man, there's much more to it than that.
I think it would be interesting if somebody remade it today. And Dr. Moreau was a woman.
Oh, yeah.
And how different would the movie be? I don't know.
Oh, Bill, I think you need to write that.
Yeah. Okay, I'm on it. All right, hey, I wrote it. Hey, it did great contest. Hey, nobody wants to buy it. Awesome. Thank you, Hollywood. Thank you. Anyway.
Well, I mean, they made Ocean's 8, so why couldn't they make a female version of Dr. Moreau? So,
yeah, Cate Blanchett looks killer freaking hot in that, man.
I actually kind of want to see that, so.
Yeah, I heard iffy things about it.
It might be a date night movie if I see it.
Well, I ain't got no date, so.
You can come with us, Bill.
Oh, boy, great. Yeah, third wheel, yeah! I'll hold the popcorn! I'll hold it! I got the popcorn.
Bill, it better not be the bottomless popcorn bucket, if you know what I mean.
Oh, hey!
Well, you know, a movie I was thinking about bringing up during the swimming pool show, but I didn't, and it's actually much more appropriate for this one, is 1977 Shockwaves.
Ah, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. You're the one who told me all about that one.
Yeah, and you know what? This is another film that, you know, I first saw when I was younger, and it left like a really lasting impression. But, it, you know, I think it does some really neat things, and it's a pretty low budget movie. But,
yeah.
You know, it's like you got this pathetic touring boat, basically, captained by John Carradine.
I love John Carradine, man.
Oh, he's awesome. Man, talk about he was like Bela Lugosi. He would take any part that came his way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's essentially about this really disparate group of people who are just touring, doing an island tour in this boat that constantly breaks down. And then some people go missing and they wind up rowing to this nearby island that appears to be completely deserted.
Right.
Except for one person. Duh, duh, duh. And it's just... You know, it was the first of this very short-lived subgenre of the Nazi, underwater Nazi zombie movie. and I mean, I guess it doesn't sound like huge praise to say it's the best of the bunch.
The best island horror Nazi movie you'll ever see.
Out of like maybe the five that are out there. I'm probably just
five too many.
Yeah, don't quote me on that, but... but yeah, I think it's a really, you know, you're talking about isolation, Bill, like despair, lack of hope, you know, I just,
yeah, very
think
Joy Division. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that film, you've lost control again, Bill, but just,
yeah. What will burn, Johnny? What will burn? Go ahead, man. Well, that's Wicker Man. That's coming up. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I just, it's probably one of my favorite horror movies set on an island. Some of it's the low budget, I think. You know, I listen to the commentary and some of the interviews on the Blu-ray, and you really get an insight into what the filmmakers were working with and how they were essentially using kind of what they had in front of them to, and just trying to dress it up a little to make it creepy.
Yeah.
But it's got a really cool setting. There's just this huge hotel that was apparently an actual just abandoned hotel down in, off the coast of Florida where they filmed it.
Nice.
And it's just, you know, the whole thing is just really heavy with mood, and there's a certain, it's sort of like the setting is removed from contemporary history. You know, it's the character who inhabits the island is this old Nazi commandant played by Peter Cushing. And it feels like the hotel hasn't been occupied since like the end of the Second World War, which is probably the feeling incidentally that they were kind of going for.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that movie is like really ripe with mood and a sense of desperation as it goes along.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. I don't love it as much as you do. I know why you love it, and I think if I was a little kid watching it with you, I might have the same feelings. But maybe I saw it too late in life, you know. But I didn't see the other Nazi movie, island movie, I'm going to bring up right now. I don't know if you saw this one coming. Yeah, you ready?
No.
2011's The Devil's Rock.
Shit, you know, you've mentioned that before, and I have not seen it yet.
What the hell's wrong with you?
I have not seen it.
Oh, man, it's Paul Campion's film, written by him and Brett Ahaka and Paul Finch, and it's D-Day, right before D-Day. Kiwi commandos from New Zealand, obviously, they're sent to destroy a German gun emplacement on in the Channel Islands. To spearhead, you know, path for Normandy and invasion, and they discover a Nazi occult plot to .. and it's really intriguing. It starts off with a bang, of course, and then it settles down into a battle of wits and psychology and torment and ultra claustrophobic, isolated type atmosphere. With these commandos, and when I say commandos, I mean like a couple of them, and a couple of Nazis, and the lovely and vivacious Gina Varela as the demon, who the Nazis have locked away there. And what do demons want? They want to be free.
Mm.
So what are our commandos going to do? What are the Nazis going to do? Can anybody do anything? What the hell's going on? And that's what it's about, because it's Devil's Rock.
You know, Bill, when I used to buy Fangoria like years ago, they had ads for that movie in the magazine, and I just thought the ads looked so corny, and that's why I avoided it.
Don't avoid it.
Yeah, from what you're saying, it sounds like has a bit more on its mind than
it did. It's not perfect, but I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the being in it. I mean, it's one of those films where the way they're doing it, it's like you're in there. You're in there with the commandos, you're in there with the Nazis, you're in there with the demon, and it's like, how am I going to get off this rock, man? You know, game over. Sorry.
So it sort of builds up this, like, I guess something that these island films do is that they build up kind of a pressure cooker situation sometimes where...
Exactly, yeah.
You know, that tension, there's like the tension between people, and then there's the tension between whatever the other is. You know, it could be people, it could be something else.
Yeah, and the battle's twofold, because even if you win on the island and survive the day, how the hell are you going to get off that island?
True.
You know? So that's a whole other nest of worms.
Well, you know, Bill, I'll just bring this one up briefly since it's not a good one. But
I got a list of those. We could just rattle a couple off if you want.
Well, we can do that to break it up a little bit. But
sure, let's do it.
This is really the only one I have that's really not good, and I watched it a second time recently, and I liked it even less than the first time.
You must have been desperate to, like, oh, whatever, to hit play on that thing.
Well, I think it's because of the person who made it, I was giving it a little extra leeway when I, you know, we shouldn't have. Unfortunately, it's Romero's Survival of the Dead.
Oh, yeah, I was avoiding that one.
Yeah, it's... Oh, so you haven't seen it?
No, I was avoiding bringing it up.
Oh, yeah, it's very bad. I feel bad saying it's very bad, but oh man, it's... You know when you look at... You know, when you look at certain filmmakers and see they hit a certain age and sometimes they still got it and then sometimes they don't. Like Dario Argento is another example who's like just he's just gone off the I know you've never really liked him, Bill, but he's really gone off the deep end in recent years.
I didn't see his vampire movie. I heard it was abysmal.
Oh, it's one of the worst things he's done. Yeah. But yeah, Survival of the Dead, just you talking about the Devil's Rock kind of reminded me of that for some reason. But it's really like a bad Western. It's a bad zombie movie. Everything is just bad effects, bad blocking and staging. It's just bad. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Poor George.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Romero made a lot of good movies. So
every director has his or her bad one, that's for sure.
That's true. So what are the what bad ones do you have?
All right, here we go.
It might actually be on my good list.
Yeah. I doubt that very much. The Breed.
Okay.
Bunch of idiot college kids, whatever, on an island where something happened to people at like this little outpost. They're gone. But like the crazy mutant pack of dogs remains. Avoid it at all costs. this was so bad, I just wanted to throw up. Cabin Fever, Patient Zero.
Oh.
My God. Don't even watch it for a laugh. You're not going to get one.
That's definitely not Cabin Fever 2. Yeah.
No, Cabin Fever 2 is the best of the bunch for me, man. This one I hated, and I'm sure when it was made, they were like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so mind-blowing that people are going to freak out, and it's pure unadulterated shit. That is, Who Can Kill a Child?
Oh, Bill.
Oh, why, you like that piece of crap?
You know I like that
one,
dude.
Oh, I forgot that you do. Why?
Well, why do you hate it?
Because it's stupid.
Well, okay.
It's totally stupid. The buildup is awful. It's like, we know you're going to kill. Just fucking kill them already. They were waiting forever. It's like, what do you want? Do you want any body parts left? Kill the damn kid. I would have been like, it would have been, well, they probably would have killed me. But if I'd made it, I would have taken them all out, man. Little sons of bitches.
Bill, you know what? I watched that movie a couple years back, and I'm like, I think you're being too hard on it, honestly, because I think the situations where the characters find themselves confronting those kids isn't as easy as it being, just shoot them because they're just standing in a mob or a line.
This Spanish film, and I love Spanish cinema, I love Spanish horror, this thing took forever. It's 2 hours long. It needed to be an hour and 30 minutes long, if not less. And it took them forever to take action. And I was just, I tore my skin off. I had to go to hospital. They thought I was trying to kill myself by ripping my own skin off. So I look like Frankenstein's monster now, thanks to this movie, man.
Oh, Bill. Bill, Bill, Bill.
Anyway, we roll on to another crappy film. This is a good crappy film that everybody needs to see. It's one of those B movie, bad it's frickin' awesome, especially when the creature is like a bunch of puppets, man. And it's so bad it's good. The Killer Shrews.
Oh yeah, I've seen the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of it.
Then you know I don't need to say anything else, man, because that's just James Best in there and. oh man, it's just like a Ray Kellogg film written by Jay Sims, and it's just like so bad. It's fantastic, bad in the best possible way.
To quote the episode, Ingrid is good, but James is best.
Oh, bam! All right, this is one I think a lot of people might like. I remember when I was a kid, I saw it and I was like, boy, this just isn't moving, man. at all. 1982's Humongous.
I haven't seen that one
yet.
Yeah,
you don't need to, man. Again, okay. Monstrous offspring from a violent crime grows up in seduction on an island. Where a boat of hapless teens have shipwrecked. There we go. Dot, dot, dot. Make your own plot. Better yet, make your own cliche. And here's another eco horror. And wait, if I'm correct, I'm gonna laugh my ass off. I did, no, Raymaland, Sam Elliott. The only time you'll see him, as far as I remember, in film without a mustache.
Oh yeah,
it's 1972's Frogs.
Was that an island, Bill?
Yeah, they were on, okay. On an island estate.
Okay, all right.
And it was, and again, it's a group of hapless victims. They're always hapless, Johnny. Maybe if they were hap, maybe if they had hap, they wouldn't be in these situations.
Hap-ho, Bill.
But you know what was really awful about this film? Because it's like, okay, the frogs, I get it, blah, blah, blah. But then they're introducing all of these different types of, like, reptiles and birds and insects and stuff that are not even within, like, 1,000 miles of this place, you know? It's like, who wrote this? Well, I could tell you. Robert Hutchison and Robert Blease, and it was directed by George McCowan.
Well, I think the thing with that one, Bill, is
Joan Van Ark is in it, don't forget.
Yeah, and I think I read a review that said, like, they only had, like, 12 frogs. It seemed like they only had 12 frogs to use in the movie, so, yeah.
So those are my bad ones. And, of course, we're leaving out all of the Godzilla films, because, you know, we could go to Monster Island.
I think I want to live on Monster Island. It would be preferable to the States now.
Well, the whole thing is, you know, we need to do a whole Godzilla show, because... You know, Japan's an island. You know, have you seen Shin Godzilla yet, the new one?
No, I haven't. I've heard good things about
shit.
It, though.
Dude. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Dude,
all right.
Check it out. Holy hell.
Is it better than that 2014 movie?
Oh, my God. It's the best Godzilla movie since the first one.
Damn. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez, Bill.
It's the politics of fighting a monster. That's what it... And they did it so well, it's just... Awesome. What kind of red tape do we have to cut through to cut down Godzilla? Well, first we have to take that to a committee. Dude, I'm not kidding. It was awesome. I hope they have a sequel because it's just, I just friggin' loved it, man.
Oh, man.
I was surprised. I was shocked and I was like,
No, I saw a lot of people talking about that one. It actually sounds like a Godzilla movie crossed with The Wire, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, do it. Check it out.
Well, Bill, perhaps to get back on track, I think one movie the two of us, can agree on is this very fun 80s sort of slasher film called April Fool's Day.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot to put that on my damn list. What an idiot.
You know what? It's such a freaking fun movie.
It really is. And some people really trash it. Because they're disappointed with where it goes, and I'm like, screw you, man. It's April Fool's Day, you pinhead.
That's what makes it special, and I think that's why it didn't do so well when it came out, was because it was in the thick of Michael, Freddy, and Jason mania.
Agreed.
And here's this movie that comes out that's, you know, well, what's April Fool's Day? It's the day everybody, you know, most people like to play practical jokes and get a laugh, and I think that's probably what didn't go over well with horror fans looking for the gore or the slashing, like the, you know, because it's a much more restrained film than what the current slasher cycle was.
Yeah, it was, but it was cool. It had almost an Agatha Christie and Then There Were None type feel to it as well. And,
oh yeah,
you know, it stars the delectable, the delicious Deborah Foreman, who's really phenomenal, and. It's a fun movie. It's a fun romp.
Yeah, it sort of predicts stuff like Cabin in the Woods and Scream and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I really think that writer Danilo Bach and director Fred Walton really did a damn good job. You know, 1986, man. It was, wow, gosh, that's so freaking long ago, man.
Yeah, that's, oh my God.
42 years ago?
32.
32? What, 42, 32? At this point, doesn't matter.
Bill, I was born in 81. Don't say I'm like 40-something.
Well, you will know. You will know, Johnny.
It'll be soon enough, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think, especially these days, when I think horror is kind of sometimes stuck in that gore is better kind of mentality,
yeah,
you know, I still think like April Fool's Day has its place, and that's why I think it's aged so well as a movie.
Gotcha. And on that note, since we're doing a little fun stuff here, I'm going to go to a movie that I don't know what people think about it. I watched it by accident.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it. It's not phenomenal, but I had a really fun time with Jay Chandrasekhar's Club Dread from 2004. I thought it was fun, man. You know, a serial killer, you know, totally screws up all the fun at it's a special Coconut Pete's Coconut Beach Resort. It's a hedonistic island, you know, for swingers and stuff. So, well, you already know what's happening now, right? You know, typical slasher. And, you know, people start getting cut up. And it's funny. Jordan Ladd's in it as Penelope. I love her to death. You know, she's hyper delicious. Let's see, Jay himself is in there, the director. Bill Paxton plays Coconut Pete himself. You know, I'd like, dude, come on, Bill Paxton, man. And he's playing Coconut friggin' Pete, man. You know, check this thing out. It's fun. It's comedy horror. It's supposed to be fun. And I could add now, it's 14 years old. And so if you want one of those late night movies with popcorn and just to kick back and have a good time, you know, this is one of them. Enjoy it.
Yeah, it's from the guy, the Broken Lizard.
Yes.
Comedy troupe who also did Super Troopers and Super Troopers 2 recently. Yeah,
and I like this better than Super Troopers, and I know people punch me in the face for that, but you know, I don't care.
You know what, Bill? I'm not a big fan of Super Troopers, but I've never seen Club Dread, so I'll check it out.
Oh, it's fun, really. Just, you know, check your brain at the door and just enjoy it for what it
is. I'll see if I'm capable of doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Club Dread.
Well, you know, Bill, a movie that, you know, April Fool's Day sort of had this conceit of the island is kind of screwy, it's kind of goofy, right, but it could also possibly be inhabited by a woman who's crazy. And something that I like about, I guess, island horror films or more macabre films that take place on an island is adding that notion of someone being disturbed, possibly, or right, being among the disturbed, I think has an extra effect on me. Mm-hmm. Rather than if it's just simply a group of survivors fighting a monster, kind of.
Right, right, right.
And you're probably going to give me flack for this, but I gotta say Shutter Island for me.
Why would I? I don't consider it a horror.
I know, but
it is what comes to mind when I first thought of this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, why do you think I didn't like it?
No, I was thinking you didn't like it, yeah.
I give it 4 out of 5 stars, man.
Are you serious?
Why would I lie to you, man? How long have we been doing this show, you pain in the ass?
Actually, I'd give it 4 stars, too. This is scary. Yeah.
I really loved this movie. I loved where it went. I loved how Alice in Wonderland it became, how dark it got, and it has, for me, one of the best end lines that really just mess with your head in all of cinema. And the only other movies that come close to it with that end line are Dogville and, and I forgot the other one. It just jumped out of my head because I'm on the island with Coconut fucking Pete, man.
I was going to say Glengarry Glen Ross, Bill.
No, but go ahead. Keep going. You go.
Well, I just, you know, I think people in horror circles were kind of giving it some attention when it came out because it was, you know, Martin Scorsese sort of dipping his toes back into like
the water. Less,
but it's like not what you would think of for a director like him. It didn't seem like a prestige picture, you know, because So it was kind of interesting for that fact, and the trailer was awesome. I fixated on that trailer for a long time in anticipation for the movie because it just visually and the way it was cut, it just really floored me before I saw the thing proper. But I think there's certain sequences, Bill, that he's doing like a deliberate homage to like Hammer films or something like that with the way. With the way blood looks at certain points, like during this, there's this wonderful nightmare sequence that the lead character is having about halfway through. And it's like it has this very free-flowing kind of logic to it that is very dreamlike. And I think that right there is really awesome.
Yeah, it takes place in 1954 with Leonardo DiCaprio playing a U.S. Marshal investigating the disappearance of a murderer who escaped from a hospital for the criminally insane on this island. And it's great because it could have gone down this typical path that we're used to. It's like, oh, here we go. You know, it's like this drudging, horrific piece of crap. But it definitely wasn't that. It was based on a book by Dennis Lehane. And the person who helped write the script was Leda Kalogridis. And just like with the cast alone, and I know some people were probably like, man, talk about hyper commercial. But they really rocked it. You have Leonardo DiCaprio, you have Mark Ruffalo, Ben Kingsley, Max von Sydow, Michelle Williams, Emily Mortimer, who's always Patricia Clarkson, who I want to marry, Jackie Earle Haley, Ted Levine, John Carroll Lynch, Elias Koteas, and the list goes on. And it's a really potent film that goes down some really unexpected paths. And, you know, when I have college students coming up going, you know what, I really like Shutter Island, I'm like, all right. You know, it's like, but it is a thriller, that's for sure. So, you know, we could definitely include it in our little horror category.
Yeah, it's very well, I mean, as you would expect from Scorsese, even though it is very much like a genre piece, it's very extremely well crafted. And you know what, Bill, I wanted to...
And that's Shudder with two T's, not two D's.
Good call. Yeah. I wanted to say that the last line in that movie is actually not in the book. They added it for the movie.
What?
Yeah, because I read the book.
No offense, I'm not surprised, because I read some of Dennis Lehane's work. I'm not surprised it was written in by somebody else. Bam, there you go right there. The other movie I was thinking, Martyrs.
Oh.
For Endline.
Okay. All right, yeah.
Randy Braska knows what I'm talking about. R.S. Braska, he knows.
I know what you're talking about, too. I just haven't watched that movie in a while.
That's a hard one. It's not like, I want to watch it again tonight, honey. Come on, sit down next to me. Yeah, we'll have fun.
Yeah, I forget. I watched something recently that was one of those gut punch movies that I can't watch very often. But, well, Bill, what else do you got?
Well, you know what? Since we're keeping it in, like, you know, a little thriller action and all that stuff, I'm going to go to the mystery thriller. By Mario Bava from 1970, and one of my favorite movie title names of all time because of the name. The title is just pure freaking gold to me, and the movie could have been better, but that is Five Dolls for an August Moon.
That's not the one I thought you were going to say. Okay.
Oh, really? What one? What other island movie, Island of Mario Bava movie you were talking about?
Does Twitch of the Death Nerve take place on an island? AKA a Bay of Blood.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's in a bay. Yeah, we'll give it to him.
Well, do $5 for an August Moon. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it? It's beautifully shot. Five people on an island, you know, to relax. But, of course, they find themselves, you know, trapped, and there's a murder in the mist, and, you know, they have nowhere to go. So that's pretty much what takes place there. You could, you know, figure out the rest. This is, believe it or not, it's based on Agatha Christie's, as we were talking about, and then there were none. But this story was more economical, and it doesn't necessarily follow that particular path, especially when you have, just a handful of people. But again, you know, cinematography solid, the color is beautiful, but it didn't pay off for me as well as it should have. Definitely in the giallo vein, but it just it's a little toned down on many levels.
All right,
it's like Mario Bava reeling it back a little bit. I think he was trying to reel it back to actually provide more punch. But the movie needed more meat. It needed more substance within, you know, the words and the actions of the characters.
Okay, I do get what you're saying there, Bill. Yeah. And it actually sounds like, are you eating like a hot dog or a soft pretzel? Because it sounds like you're being dive bombed by seagulls.
There are birds squawking outside. I have to have the window open or else I'll die.
No, I know where you're at right now. So.
And the neighbor's cat. Dallas is sitting down there, like, you know, looking up at the sky going, just land here. I'll take you to a special place.
Are you sure the cat's not named Jonesy Bill?
Ah! Oh, she cries like crazy. It's like, come on, pet me, bitches! And the funny thing is she's a little cat, but she's killed a full adult squirrel, man, and dragged it around.
You'd be surprised at what a cat can do.
Oh, yeah. I'm not, man. And, man, mice parts everywhere. But I love her, man. She's a great cat.
Well, you know, Bill, we're talking about some crazy off-the-rails films, like we mentioned the remake of Island of Dr. Moreau, mm-hmm. The doomed Dr. Moreau. Another film I got to bring up, and it might fall more into the thriller category itself, but it was released by Scream Factory, so I'm going to give it a pass. It's based off the novel by Peter Benchley, and it's directed by Michael Ritchie, who directed The Bad News Bears, of all things. It's the 1980 film The Island. Have you seen The Island?
Oh, I didn't have this down, did I? Did I overpass this one? 1980. Oh, with Michael Caine and David Warner.
Yeah.
It's funny because I can't remember it, but I had to have seen it. Because Michael Caine, man, if he's in anything, I'm there. And David Warner, I mean, he's just one of my favorites as well. So I might have. I just can't recall it offhand, man.
You know, Bill, when I see you next, I'll loan my copy to you. And I got it right next to me, so I'll remember it.
Whoa.
But it's just a crazy movie. It's one of those movies where you just got to sit and watch it and accept. You either accept it for what it is, or you're just going to totally be ejected from it. Just because Peter Benchley wrote the script and no one else is credited on it, so I'm guessing either his script was completely different or they were faithfully bringing his script to the screen, but it's a chaotic movie. It's about pirates and how Michael Caine and his son get waylaid on this island. The son starts to go under the wing of the pirate king played by David Warner. It's just a very bizarre film. Maybe a bit of Lord of the Flies thematics going on there.
I think I remember this. I'm reading the synopsis now, which is bizarre.
Yeah, the movie is just very strange.
Oh my god, yeah, wow. I think, was Peter Benchley doing mushrooms when he wrote this?
It's either Peter Benchley was doing mushrooms or the filmmakers were on the island and they were just like, there are no cops here, we'll just do mushrooms and see what happens.
Yeah, it sounds like it might have been directed by our man who did the Lair of the White Worm.
Yeah, it kind of is like that, actually. Now you really got to see it.
Oh, man.
But it's it's an interesting mix of, like, it's kind of like a folkloric kind of story. Like, apparently this feral pirate community has been hidden from civilization for centuries, and... You know, I seem to remember it's kind of being all too easy that they stumble across them initially. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's kind of one of those movies you watch with your jaw slack.
Oh, man. Yeah, because Michael Ritchie, I mean, he did the Fletch movies, you know, which I thought were, you know, fairly decent. Yeah, it looks like he embraced his Ken Russell for this one.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, if you catch it in the right mood, you might have a good time with it. So,
gotcha, man.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm going to another comedy horror because I have to actually send a text.
Holy shit, Bill. Well, you want me to talk about something?
No. It's all good, man. I'm playing. What I love is I love Irish horror films, and they're some of my favorite because they're just consistently awesome. And this is written by Kevin Lahan and directed by John Wright, and they had minimal money in their budget, and they had to because of the element on this particular island where these people are, had to be big and nasty, so they had to rely on CGI, and for their minuscule budget... I mean, it is some of the best CGI I've seen. I was, like, so blown away by it. I couldn't believe it. And that's the movie Grabbers from 2012. It's an island off the coast of Ireland. It's invaded by blood-sucking aliens. And this is great. And this is great because this is all their ads. So I'm not giving anything away. The heroes discovered that the only way to survive the alien is to be drunk. So how do you get wasted and fight an alien creature? This movie is blast. It's got your gore. You got your slime. You got your comedy. It is a riot, and it's really cool at the same time. And I remember, I think I was up like 2, 3 in the morning watching this, and I was like, that's just friggin' awesome. It was just so good. A lot of fun. Really, Irish horror, I would say 95% of them are definitely worth watching once, if not twice, and then some. And this is one of that group of like best Irish horror films. It's a blast.
You know, Bill, you're going to hate me. I still haven't seen Grabbers.
I hate you. Hate you, Johnny.
I really want to see it. You don't have that one, do you?
No.
No. Okay.
Not yet, oh, man. Wow. Not yet, but...
But I agree with what you're saying about Irish horrors. Like, I know we've watched a couple, and...
Yeah.
They've really...
Isolation, which we were talking about before.
Good God, yeah.
Isolation. Wakewood, which is phenomenal. I think Randy Braska was also talking about that one, too. And those are just... Those are like two of the best. And what was the one from last year that was really fantastic? Two People in a House. A Dark Song.
Bill, was Dorothy Mills Irish as well? Because we watched that last year.
Dorothy Mills. Let me check. Yeah, that was Carice Van Houten. Oh my God,
that was a great movie.
Love her. Yeah. Love, love, love. Yes, it's an Irish-French co-production. Yeah. Yeah, that was damn good. Yeah. Oh, my God. And who was it? Jen Murray, who played Dorothy. Oh, my God. That was her first movie. She destroyed it.
Oh, she was amazing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's a movie people have to see. And I swear, Carice Van Houten, she is one of the greatest actresses of all fucking time. She can lose herself in a role. You don't even know it's her. She could, like, accents are disguised properly, her mannerisms. She's like total chameleon, man. She's like the Gary Oldman of female actresses.
Ooh, that's high praise.
Damn straight it is, and I mean it.
I know you do, Bill.
Oh, she could play the island of Dr. Moreau's Dr. Moreau is a woman.
There you go.
Dude, oh, I'm writing it for her. Go ahead, Johnny.
Finally, whoa. Bill, we got the catalyst. We're bringing it back here. Awesome.
Okay. I think I know. There's only one movie I have left.
Well, we might have the same one. Is it Fulci's Zombie, Bill?
Oh, okay, cool. I'll take that.
No, I mean, Zombie is just Zombie 2, depending on what region you're in. It's sort of like Shockwaves. It's your standard issue boat of people. They have boat problems, and they wind up on this island. They find what they're looking for. They're searching for Tisa Farrow, sister of Mia Farrow. Her scientist father was on this island helping out good old Richard Johnson carry out some experiments on the dead through like voodoo and stuff like that. So you got the Walking Dead on the island, which is something, you know, you don't quite anticipate.
My favorite scene, man. My favorite scene is the underwater shark attack, shark zombie attack.
You know what, Bill? What I find funny about that scene is that zombie, he moves like he's dancing in a Broadway musical.
Yeah, he does. And that's the trainer, and that's the shark that he trains. Right. And it's just so, like, who trains a shark? And I was just so... messed up.
No, it's definitely a cool scene.
It was one of the most unique scenes I think in all of horror ever.
Wow.
I mean, come on, man. Oh yeah, we're gonna have a shark attack with a real shark. Like, it's like, what the hell? Can you see the guy coming? Yeah, I could do this. And I could see Fulci like, well, you know, we're outside the waters of Italy making this, so I don't give a shit what you do, man. Go ahead, you get killed. We're recording it. We'll put it in.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Holocaust, man. I watched a trainer get his head bitten off by his pet shark.
Yeah, I was going to say, Zombie was the one that went all the way. Yeah. No, but you know, I'd love to see the pile of clearances he had to sign off on in case he died accidentally.
I probably was just like, "Hey, you get killed, Tanya." I mean, there's probably nothing, man. There's probably nothing written anywhere on it.
You're probably right, because the Italians sort of worked fast and loose with
that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, we're making movies. A movie. You want to be in a movie? Yeah, okay. You get hurt, it's on you. Okay. You know, that's it.
Yeah, but yeah, I just think it's a, you know, a lot of people sort of cast it aside as like just a ripoff of, you know, Dawn of the Dead, which was hugely successful at that time, around that same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it holds up really well. The gore holds up. And, you know, the characters aren't just, canon fodder. I think that.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
There's actually some detail. Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
No, they're smart. They're concerned. You know, they're trying to like, okay, how can we get out of this? And, you know, there is some variety there. It's just, the end scene though is the one I my biggest problems with, and there was nothing Fulci could do about it apparently.
Because is that because they recorded that hilarious voiceover at the radio station?
Yeah, but it was during the Brooklyn Bridge shot.
Well, what about it?
Well, the thing is, it's supposed to be abandoned and all everything, and you see the cars moving on it because they couldn't afford to have they didn't have enough money to pay to have the bridge shut down for that shot. So it's like, okay. So it's like, well, why'd you do that then? Damn it.
Yeah, because I think they were, if I've heard correctly, they were actually stealing all the footage off of, you know, they were just filming without a permit, I think, on that.
Yeah, because they couldn't afford it, so they're like, but I'm like, why'd you do that? Why don't you go somewhere else, man? You could pick the bridge anywhere, you know? Like, I don't know. I guess they wanted it to be iconic with New York and all, but it was like, come on.
It's funny. I read a review of it, Bill, just by some, like, in the pre blogger days, this guy had a website where he reviewed like Italian horror films, and he made light of that ending, and he was sort of joking, saying about how the people in people on the bridge were driving the cars were like, I don't care if there's a zombie outbreak, I'm late for work or something. Yeah, like that.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think it's a great example of island horror, and you have that element, that cultural element of voodoo, which I don't, you know, Fulci said he wasn't influenced by Romero, he was influenced more by Jacques Tourneur, who did I Walked with a Zombie back in the 40s, which was also centered around The Walking Dead, but in terms of voodoo ritual, bringing the dead back to life.
Yep. Oh, yeah, man. So I guess we only have one island movie left, Johnny, and it's the one.
And I'm curious. Okay, I know
it's
what
the
it
only.
Is.
It's the only one it can be. And to be honest, I'm not really a fan of it because even before I knew anything what it was about, when I just started watching, it's like I know where this is going to go. It's just one of those things. So it's 1973's The Wicker Man, directed of course by Robin Hardy, from Andy Schaefer and David Pinner, and starring, of course, the phenomenal Christopher Lee with awesome hair, the also late great Edward Woodward, Britt Eklund, Ingrid Pitt are also in there, and it's a police officer, police sergeant actually, goes to a Scottish island in search of a missing girl who the townsfolk claim never existed. Sort of like the leader of this community is Christopher Lee, and it's not that our poor Sergeant Howie needs to like navigate all these people. It just doesn't matter. You know, he's got to like navigate like everything, and he's freaked out, perturbed, concerned for this little girl, and it's just takes him down a very, very dark path, and forget the remakes, they're crap, forget all of that.
Well, there was the remake, the infamous Not the Bees, Nicolas Cage remake. And then there was the sequel called The Wicker Tree.
Oh god, that is just
I haven't seen that
man. Did I see this Wicker Tree?
Robin Hardy was the one who came back to, you know, to do that one.
Yeah, I gave this a half star. I would give it zero if I could. It's really, it's despicable. It is absolutely awful. The saddest part in the universe was to see Christopher Lee come back. He was like 90-something, and to play this like 2-second scene, and like, what he should have done was he should have shuffled up to the camera with a grenade and just lobbed it and just like taken everybody out. It was just really abysmal.
I was talking to you about before the show how I saw like there was apparently two cuts of the film like back in the video days.
There
was like I guess a version that was closer to 2 hours, and then there was like an 80 some minute version, which I guess was what played in American theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that version, so I don't even really feel qualified to remark on the film very much, because I don't feel like I've seen the proper version of it, and I really don't remember much outside of the obvious set pieces from the cut version that I saw. So.
Yeah, well, this was based on Robin Hardy's novel, Cowboys for Christ. He wrote it, and he also the script, and he directed it, and...
How do you get the Wicker Man out of Cowboys for Christ?
I don't even want to venture a guess, and I really don't care. It's just really, it was just so abysmal, man. It was just absolutely awful. But the Wicker Man, you know, it's one of the most beloved and from 73. And, you know, it just didn't, you know, resonate with me like it does with a lot of other people. But it's definitely not a bad film by any means. It's just...
I want to watch the full version and make an assessment from there. So.
You do that, Johnny. Good luck.
Well, Bill, you know what? We can mention one more briefly, so we can end on a high note.
Uh-oh.
What about Takashi Miike's imprint, man?
That's a television episode.
Yeah, but I'm still counting it. It's horror, man.
I know it is, but I'm not looking at television. Pinhead.
Well, and in any case, Imprint is fantastic. We talked about it with
disgustingly Dave K. phenomenal. Yes.
Yeah, go back a couple years to our conversation on the director of the Damned, Takashi Miike, and it's another case of the crazies running Oof. Wild on an island. So.
Oh man, that was something else. That's a hard one to watch, man.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Real hard one to watch.
And we could do a series on that show. Yeah. I mean,
damn.
Yeah, that. Whatever.
Today we're looking at frame 7. We'll be talking about it for 4 hours.
Here's a show topic, Bill. Best use of needles in a horror episode movie.
Gee, I wonder what. Anyway.
Well, Bill, I think I'm getting sunburnt from all this conversation, and
Johnny. The sharks won't touch you. Really, go for a swim.
You know, Bill, I never really asked you, what are your feelings about, like, have you ever vacationed on an island, like, to get away, or is that not something you're interested in?
I've been on, like, little islands. I haven't been to the Caribbean yet. I was just talking to people about that the other day. I haven't been to the Caribbean. I was in England. That's part of an island. And I was on Vancouver Island and, you know, some other little ones, but I didn't specifically go away to a vacation island. Although that would be awesome.
Okay. All right.
What about you, man? You went to Iceland, you bastard.
Yeah, I did. And Iceland, jealous. I mean, I went in March, so it wasn't like ideal sitting by the beach weather.
It depends on what you're into.
That's true. That would be the time of year I'd want to go to the beach, honestly. I don't like the heat. You know, I know it's cooler next to the beach, you know, next to the water, but I just like sitting out in the sun and, you know, just walking through the water never really appealed to me. I don't know. Maybe I should just go to the Caribbean or do something like that sometime just to see how I'd feel about it, you know, if I had the bread to do that. But
I go to the beach looking for mermaids. I know they're real, man.
Oh, and then it would turn into the lore and it would be awesome.
The lore and She Creature.
I haven't seen She Creature.
What? Oh.
Is that a Roger Corman, Bill?
No. But it's, let me see who directed that real quick. What did they call it? It was supposed to be the first of, like, a mermaid tale. The Mermaid Tales, and it never, The Mermaid Chronicles. And let's see who did it. Sebastian Gutierrez did it. He wrote and directed. And it stars Carla Gugino.
Oh, shit. Rufus I've got to see it now.
The great Rena Wilson's in there. Jim Pittock. Who else have we got? Yeah, Gil Bellows. He's always cool as hell. It's great. It's a blast. The ending's phenomenal. And let's see. Who played the damn mermaid again? Yeah, Raya Kilstedt. Oh, my
God. Okay, then.
But anyway, on that note, I think I need to scream out to people, Johnny.
I think you need to scream really loud, Bill, because they're like out on some dinghy and it's a storm coming.
You're not going to make it. What? I said you're going to make it. Really? No, no, you're not. Anyway.
I think Gore Blimey will like that.
I am Gore Blimey. There you go. We snuck in a scream out just for him today. All right. I am Gore Blimey. He's fantastic. Was he in? He's in Wales, right?
He is in Wales, yeah.
Awesome, man. We got to go. We got to go check that guy out there. Hang on.
I want to meet him.
Damn straight. And other people you might want to meet, and you can follow them on Twitter, and these are their twiddle. Wait, hold on. I'm taking a drink of water now.
Mowage is the twiddle handle of the squeam out.
You're such an ass. All right, here we go. People you can follow on Twitter. MFF Horror Corner. This is John Levengood. We're going to have him on a show. He doesn't know it yet. We're going to have him on a show. We're going to talk about bugs in horror movies because he knows his bugs.
Yep.
Horror lover, movie critic, film collector, and a podcaster. You can check out Movies, Films, and Flicks at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you. That's two in a row. On Blog Talk Radio, and also at moviesfilmsandflicks.com. The lovely, the vivacious, a woman we adore on this show, who's also written for CrashPalaceProductions.com, as well as Loud Green Bird, Dixie Ferry, and that is the fantastic Kim McDonald. She's a little horror junkie from Charleston, South Carolina. And you can find her stories and reviews at Ferry Musings, and also at LoudGreenBird.com, and also CrashPalaceProductions.com. This author is just so fantastic. We've had him on the show. Hope to have him on again soon. You love horror novels? This is the guy you need to read. And that is Israel_Finn with two N's. All he says, fiction writer. And you can check him out at a great website too, IsraelFinn.com. Another great podcast, and it's horror. I mean, who wants to do a horror podcast? These guys do. And that is Nightmare on Film Street. So that's NOFS podcast. It's a horror podcast with news and reviews with zero credibility. And we're like lower than that. Hosted by Kimmy Kill Zombie and John on a String. Those are both their Twitter handles. Check them out. They continue the terror on Twitter, and they're out of Toronto. And also go to NOFSpodcast.com. The Raging Dead, and that is, their handle is Raging of the Dead. The Raging of the Dead is a 2018 short horror zombie film. Follow them on Facebook with Raging of the Dead. We mention this person all the time on the show, but we had to give him a special singular scream out. Palco Designs, that's the great Greg Palco. He's a lover and collector and designer of horror, super genius. You can contact him at palcodesigns.com. What a website. You want movie posters done, album covers, books. This is the guy. Promote Horror. Welcome to PromoteHorror.com, where they bring creators of horror and horror fans together. We've loved, respected, and admired them for quite some time. Go to their website as well. Audiobook Reviewer, and that is at Audiobook Rev, R-E-V. Audiobook reviews that make your ears perk up. They're out of Wisconsin. Go to their website, audiobookreviewer.com. Last but not least, a woman Johnny and I adore to no end, and she will be on the show soon. We're working on that now, even as we speak. That is Tracy_TR. She is the queen pin behind Scream Radio, no E. And she's streaming radio dedicated to all things horror and more. She's out of Hammond, Indiana. Screamradio.com. Again, without the E, go there. And if you didn't know, she's a great narrator and one hell of a singing voice. Absolutely lovely woman. We adore her. And those are the scream outs.
Awesome, Bill. Yeah.
What'd you say, possum?
Oh, well, there might be one wandering around.
Oh, my God. They're cute. They're not cute, but.
Oh, you know, weird story, Bill. I was driving back from a concert last Saturday night, and there was like this. It was up Interstate 83 going north towards Harrisburg, and there was like a string of roadkill, like fresh roadkill. And my girlfriend was with me, who you know, and it was at night, and I see this thing on the shoulder, and it's like, it took me a second. I was like, that's a fucking possum, but it was like the size of a corgi. So I don't know if that's typical.
They could get big. Yeah.
I'd never seen a possum that big before, but that must have been what it was. It freaked me out for a second.
That's
so.
Why people hunt them and eat them, man.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, well, Dr. Moreau set them loose.
I need to make a movie about half man, half possum.
Possum man. Oh, that's impossible. But anyway, my name is Billy Crash, and you can find me at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show, as well as wonderful articles from our own Johnny Numb and Dixie Fairy and more. You could also follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace. And also go to Redbubble for Crash Palace and look up our wonderful T-shirts and other wonderful things with the logo for Crash Palace and the Last Knock Horror Podcast, designed by the great Paul Belci, B-E-L-C-I, one hell of a graphic designer. He also does the whole kit and caboodle for designs, and you can check out his page on LinkedIn under his name, Paul Belci, B-E-L-C-I. Johnny?
Nice. By the way, the DC, the film end of DC Comics, get in touch with me, because Possum Man is what you need to revive your cinematic universe. So give me a call. And 200 million to make Possum Man. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can find my stuff at Crash Palace Productions when I like to write things. So there we go.
Yay!
Yay.
All right, man. Johnny, that's it.
I need a vacation after this show, Bill.
Yeah, let's go to an island not inhabited by Dr. Moreau.
Yeah. I think I'll just visit you this weekend. How does that sound?
All right, come on up, Johnny. We'll have fun in the heat. All right, man, have a good one.
You too, Bill. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.